Let us see what the future holds.
Hello, listeners, and welcome once again to What the Future Holds, a Star Trek Discovery podcast. I am one of three, Brandy Jekyll, and with me, as always, are two of three and three of three. We'll go with two of three first. Chris, how are you today?
Hello, I'm good. I'm good. I'm glad that we're finally recording, and it's been a hit and miss kind of try and do it now, try and do it. No, it's not going to work. Can we do tomorrow? No. Okay. Can we do the next day? So thank you for being flexible.
It's no problem. I'm sorry that it's just been that kind of time of the year. It's okay. It's all good.
It's the new year now.
It is the new year.
So we're officially in 2022. The sixth year.
Yeah. I've never been a big fan of, New Year celebrations, because it's just all arbitrary. All it is just another month on the calendar. And it's like, oh no, this year's going to be better. You don't know that. We all thought 2021 was going to be better, and it fucking wasn't.
I think this year, when I'm seeing people, like their posts and stuff, make this the best year yet. Like, new year, new me, all that kind of stuff. I'm like, come on. Like, I mean, I get it. It's a new year, and I like the idea of goals and good habits and whatever. But I'm also like, didn't you say that last year and the year before that and the year before that and the year before that and the year before that? Hope this is the best year ever. No, well, what about next year? Like, I want next year to be good too.
Why can't we just wish for a good year every year? Oh gosh.
Yeah, or a day. One day.
We're crapping all over people who love New Year. I'm sorry, folks.
I know.
I'm sorry. Apologies.
Fuck you, New Year's fans.
Oh!
Sorry, that was all my oh, wow. That was three of three, not two
that
of three.
I
didn't go that
absolutely
far.
Absolutely three of three. My wonderful husband, Dave. How are you, Dave?
I'm fine. We stay in for New Year's.
I did too.
New Year's is weird anyway because the months are all messed up. Mm. Like, why is December the 12th month? It should be the 10th. We should really start on March.
Well,
really?
Honestly, we can blame that on the Romans. And I'm just going to leave that there, because if you want to know more about it, look it up on Wikipedia. But it's the Romans' fault.
Pope Gregory that messed it all up with the Gregorian calendar. And so all the months got shifted by two. And so November is, what, the 11th month? And it should be
ninth.
The 9th. Yeah. September should be the 7th. October should be the 8th.
Yeah, but explain the other months. January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August. Yeah,
Of them are named after Caesars.
I don't care.
Like July, I think, is Julius. I think August is for Augustus. I don't know what the other ones are. February, I don't get that one.
Well, see.
And March, I don't get that one, unless it's Mars.
Well, it could be, but just say, fuck the Romans. You messed this up, you guys. Yep. They just kept willy-nilly adding days to the week, then taking days away from the week, then adding a month to the year. And
can we just do that now?
Right? It's just so weird. It was such a
mess. I'm adding another day after Sunday called...
Well, we've got Sunday, Moon Day. What would we call the thing in between the two?
Twilight Day.
Stars Day.
Stars Day.
Star Day. Stars
Day. There we go.
Stars Day.
Saturday, Sunday, Stars Day, Monday. I love it.
Yes.
Earth Day. That way it's not just one day of the year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Extra day off every week. I love it. I love it. We'd all be happier people, wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm. Of course, if you live in Asia, then you can celebrate the Lunar New Year, which isn't till the 1st of February.
Yeah, again, because Romans fucked it up for everyone. So.
Year of the Tiger.
They messed it up so bad that Gregory did the best he could. Or was it Gregor? He might just have been Gregor.
Year of the Water Tiger.
Greg. What did you...
Oh, Greg.
At least he made it a little more, I don't know, standard than what had come before. It's like, no more adding days. No more 8-day weeks.
Well, it is weird we have short months and some long months. It's like, why does February have to be 28 days? It's
well, here's weird. The funny thing. If we had 13 months and each of them were 28 days, we'd have 364 or 366 days in the year. And we wouldn't have to have a leap year.
Mm, interesting.
But nobody wants to have 13 months because, 13!
Which is a number that I love, personally.
Yeah.
Of course.
The unlucky number.
It's not unlucky. It's just the dumbest thing that people associate with things. Wow, welcome to the Romans Fucked It Up
Why
corner.
Why are we here?
We're here to talk about Star Trek Discovery.
Superstition.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and what an episode we had.
Yeah, it's a nice way that they do the two stories simultaneously, because they're the same theme, mm-hmm. really. Mm. Is how do we embrace what's different, and do we approach it with fear, or do we approach it with curiosity?
That we don't go out into the universe to destroy or conquer, but to connect. That's not the exact quote, but that's where the title comes from, but to connect, because it's part of a sentence that Captain Burnham says during the her address to the assembly. So,
but to connect.
Yes, with what is it, an ellipses before it? Is that right? Yeah, the dot dot dot.
Mm.
But to connect.
It's like Requiem for a Dream, ass to ass, but to connect.
Ass to connect.
Okay, I don't know what that was. Maybe I'm just too tired.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Anyway, do we want to begin on the DMA side or on the Zora side?
They do run pretty parallel, but which one would you prefer to discuss?
Well, they're pretty much independent of each other after a certain point in the episode.
Yeah. I feel like we should go Zora.
Okay.
Zora first?
Let's talk about Zora.
Well, that makes sense because it is kind of a follow-through from the previous episode where we have to deal with the fallout of knowing that we have a sentient life form on board that is the ship.
She's taken that as her form. There's a lot of interesting things to talk about in this, but let's start with trying to determine the coordinates of this race that has created the DMA and how long it's taking. I think it's been like a week.
Yeah, it's been about a week, and they've got about 147 locations or
possible
something like
locations.
That.
Yeah.
Possible locations.
147. Yeah. Zora keeps finding new possible locations, and I believe it's Stamets who's going, how long is this going to take?
Adira's give her more time.
give her more time. And Stamets says, it's already been a week. I can't remember exactly what Adira says, but it's basically on the side of just be patient. She's working as fast as she can, and she's working a lot faster than we can. So.
And then Zora's like, oh, I'll be done in a moment.
And they're both like, what?
It's like the 1 minute warning on the oven beeps, you know? Beep.
Yeah, our oven.
Better get the plates out.
Our oven warns us when it's got 1 minute left on the timer with a single beep. So.
So does my sister's oven.
Yeah. So that was Zora's warning beep, except she didn't go beep. Oh. And then she gets the coordinates and does the thing that I was expecting to happen at some point. Will not give them the coordinates. Now, I never thought that she would do anything like that out of any place of malice, but definitely out of overprotecting, which is such a heartwarming thing and so frustrating at the same time.
Yeah, I immediately knew why she didn't.
Oh, of course.
If I give you these coordinates, you will go to there.
She wasn't worried about herself. She was worried about the crew. She just said no. So they have to call Burnham down. Was it? Yeah, this is the one where she's playing with Grudge, or trying to play with Grudge, and has earned her utter disdain.
Well, there's a great metaphor right here with her trying to play with the cat, and, you know, Book's so impatient and wanting to just address this and tackle this, and it's been his thing all along, just these little moments of serenity that, you know, are short-lived, and then he's back into his anger and rage and need for revenge, that Michael's like, okay, I'm just trying to control the cat toy, not the cat. You know, I'm trying to focus on the things right in front of me that I can't control, and that's how I maintain peace, while Book is trying to control the cat.
The way Book is acting like right now is similar to how Michael was acting in the season premiere, or the series premiere, rather, of Star Trek Discovery. And her impatience and wanting to do something, wanting to act.
Right.
And ending up causing a war. And she's been through that, and she knows, she has learned from it, and she has learned patience. Yes, you feel helpless sometimes. There's literally nothing you can do about it. So find something else that you can control. I have to do that a lot because I take responsibility for things that I have absolutely no connection or control with. And I just have, my brain will just go racing. Like I think my brain thinks I should be able to solve all the pet and people homelessness in the world right now. And so it will go off on that tangent. And I'm just like, okay. We can't do that. We're one person. We can help in a one person way and hopefully inspire other people, but we cannot fix this problem alone. So we have to stop thinking in these terms. But Book is absolutely refusing to do that. He's making a choice here. He is making a choice because can choose your behavior. Book's chosen behavior right now is that of a child throwing a tantrum.
I'm tiring of Book, and I have been for a few episodes personally.
He's utilized a lot in this, and he's a great actor, but there's still people on the bridge we haven't fully explored yet.
Yeah, it's the character, not the actor for me. But I'm tiring very quickly.
Yeah, we saw this being set up, you know, the dominoes being put in place with Tarka seducing him, with Book being able to use the spore drive. There's just little pieces, you know, set on the chessboard that we can see where this is going, and just hopefully when the time comes, Book will make the right choice.
I firmly believe that Book will make the right choice.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
He's already made some wrong ones.
He has.
Yeah.
He took off with
him. He has. And he's without Michael now. He is left with Tarka. He has no one else to turn to. And what is going to happen when he finds out Tarka's awful plan or whatever it is, whatever Tarka's going to do that is going to really fuck everything up for everybody, he is going to realize all of, it's going to hit him right in the face. I swear to you, this is what's going to happen. We have no knowledge of this.
Yes.
We haven't seen it. But I think that he will ultimately make the right choice.
But I feel like it already has hit him in the face. Like when he told him, oh, I'm from a different universe and I'm just trying to get home. That to me is, oh, that's hitting him in the face. Like, yes, of course you want to go home. And I have empathy for that. But you are doing it the wrong way. And you're trying to take over. To me, that's the red flag, because you're being deceptive about your whole thing.
Yeah, but that's because you're a person who can stand back from that and see it. Book isn't there yet. Book is going to have something that's going to hit him that is going to make all of his anger and loss seem completely insignificant as to what they are up against. And the reason that I feel this way is from those little clips they gave us right after the end of the episode before the credits started. And I'm just like, Plus, there was this video that he posted on Twitter, which was between takes of a scene where he and Michael are together in some kind of spaceship that kind of has the cockpit of a snowspeeder from Empire Strikes Back. They're like back to back. And so he's like, he's holding his phone and he's like, Sinequa! And she's trying to turn, but she can't quite look at him because they're back to back and she's strapped in. And he says, and she says, what? What? He says, knock, knock. And she says, who's there? And he says, bless. And she's like, bless who? And then he's like, no, I messed it up. Okay, we're going to do it again. Knock, knock. Who's there? Etch you? Bless you. But it was just so adorable. That has nothing to do with actually what I was thinking. But seeing them together, obviously in some sort of craft that we've never seen before, is a good sign that he is going to turn back to the light and realize that whatever Tarka is planning is not going to do what he says it's going to do, that it is going to make things far, far worse in their universe.
Okay, fine. So he has a come to Jesus and turns back around and fixes things. If I were Michael, I wouldn't be able to trust him again and I would end it.
Really?
I'd be like, glad you came around, but I can't. I'm a Starfleet captain. I'm in the most important ship. I've saved the universe and you're erratic. And yes, you have a good heart, but you're not ready. You're not where I am.
Well,
because it's like he's already had several strikes against him.
Yes.
And there's moments where they tell him, hey, you need to pay attention. You need to get your head in the game. I know that you're experiencing grief and anger and such, but
of course
you're taking big risks.
Today, before we started recording, like, I'm just like, I feel like she's got another Ash Tyler on her hands now.
I disagree. I think that book is making a lot of, making some of the similar bad choices that Michael did before she learned her lesson. And how long did it take for her to learn? It took her a while. And
oh, right. One could say she's still learning.
Yeah, she is still learning. And we got to watch that journey. And so too.
But she wasn't trying to be with somebody the whole time and, like, you know, trying to be in a mature relationship, committed relationship. And now I'm just like, it's fine that he's going through that journey and doing all those things, but I don't think he has any business being with her where she is right now.
Well, he's a man without a planet. And now that he has left, I know we were going to talk about Zora, but it seems that we're going.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Just concentrating on book here. But he's a man without a planet. But now that he's basically abandoned Discovery in favor of Tarka. And so now he's a man without a family. And it's a chosen family he never quite embraced. He was always kind of distant to the Discovery crew. It's like when you're dating and the person you're dating doesn't quite gel with your friends. Book has that kind of feel. I mean, there's trying with Stamets and such, mm-hmm. but it doesn't seem like he ever quite gelled with the rest of the Disco crew, and it feels like he's just kind of standoffish in that regard.
And like having his ship in the bay the whole time, yeah. I'm kind of over it personally.
Okay, well, we'll have to agree to disagree on that point because I think you're both wrong. but
it... No, I'm not saying that he won't do that and that it'll be fine. I'm just kind of like, I'm over it personally.
Well,
like, I'm not saying that he will do that, those things will happen. I'm just saying that's what I would do, I think.
I can understand why he's doing it. I just understand also that it's the wrong choice. And the fact that he resents Michael at the end, you can tell that there's a division between them because they have two different approaches.
He's like a little brat.
Yeah, and Michael's is the one of peace and curiosity and the understanding that if we come at this hard without knowing what the repercussions are, it could be worse for us. That we might be lashing out to a thing we don't understand and comparing it to, like, insects. They don't understand they're hurting the crops. They're just doing their insect thing. And we don't hold anything against them for that. You know, we don't look at insects like locusts or anything as them meaning to hurt us. So why assume that this thing is a weapon and not something else?
Yeah, no, I get that. I'm not saying that he hasn't made wrong choices. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying he spent an entire year or more with Michael before Discovery showed up in the 31st century. And so they have this history of working together for all of that time. Nothing romantic happened during that time. That was after, at least we got to see that part of their relationship blossoming. So it's not like this has been an overnight fling or anything like that. And I just feel like, yeah, I know he's fucked up a lot. But at the same time, haven't we all? And if he finds his moment where he realizes the depth of what he has done, and then in turn does everything he can to, well, I don't know if he can make it right so much as just prevent the absolute unimaginable from happening, I think we can afford him a little bit of leniency because everybody fucks up massively. Michael started a fucking war that lasted
months. But she wasn't
months.
A Starfleet captain. She hadn't done all
she
the things
she was almost
done,
a Starfleet captain. She was a first officer. And Giorgio even told her she was going to recommend that she get her own captaincy. She was kissing being a captain.
Yes.
It would be like if Riker had done something like that.
I understand all of that. I just don't think that he is where Michael is. I don't feel like they're on equal footing
I think that's
a relationship.
Clear. Yeah, they have very distinct points of view when it comes to this.
I think she's wiser than he is, and I think she's more emotionally intelligent. I know he's been hurt. I know that he's currently having PTSD, traumatic, absolutely all of that. I get that, you know.
Well, it's one of these situations where he's in search of a solution, not understanding the situation he's in, but finding a way to resolve it, which is not going to bring back his planet. It's not going to bring back the family he's lost.
It's not going to bring him peace. It's not going to make him feel better. He will find that out one way or another.
As they say about revenge, is when you seek revenge, you might as well dig two graves. You know, one for your enemy and one for you.
Yeah, and at the same time, I don't want to see Michael, like, devastated and heartbroken and hurt again because she has worked so hard to get where she is. She deserves a man who can be there and who is there and, you know, who is, like, 100%, you know, on the level. And he's not.
He's not, but he can be. And not giving him a choice to try and be that person, I feel, is unfair. That is all I'm saying. Okay, and let's stop talking about it because we could spend the entire episode doing this. And I would like to move on to Zora. I'm not trying to cut people off. I'm just thinking we're going around in circles.
I was about to say, I'm kind of in between the two of you.
Okay.
I think we're in uncharted waters. We don't know what book is going to choose next. That we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Well, we don't even know for sure what Tark is really going to do.
Yeah. I don't trust him.
Oh, I don't either. I can't trust him as far as I can tell.
I expected Book to see through him more.
Me too.
Because there's just choices in behavior. And there's this just dismissive nature to Tarka with what might happen to subspace with this weapon used to destroy the DMA. That it could irreparably damage subspace and possibly have a ripple effect. And they just don't know. But he doesn't care because apparently he's from another universe. And so what happens to our universe or what happens to the Star Trek Prime universe, whatever we're calling it, he doesn't care. It's not going to affect him if he can find that power source and leave.
Yeah,
and
like Lorca.
To hell with everybody else. He's very Lorca-ish.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is he wants to go to a place where there was no burn, where there was none of these things that they've dealt with, and just live in peace. And I'm like, a man like you can never live in peace. Yeah.
No, not after that.
And besides that, why would you think that something bad can't happen in that universe just because there was never a burn, just because there was never this or that in that universe? That doesn't mean that there won't be something terrible that wipes everything out in the future, you moron.
And who knows if dark matter or subspace might bleed through to other universes? We don't understand. We don't know. So if he uses a weapon to destroy subspace, who knows if that's going to leak into his world, his universe.
Or the universe he wants to go to. Anyway.
And what about the teleporting right next to the president?
Okay, you know
like
what?
Security.
We're, okay, infringement. Let's just talk about this because we're not talking about Zora at all right now. So,
nope, we're not.
Let's just go ahead and talk about this other side of it because that's what we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes. I'm not. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be rude. I'm really not.
No, I really like that we have
like
kind of diametrically opposed opinions about
this. No,
I enjoy that because
it makes for an interesting discussion.
It doesn't happen. And it doesn't happen often. Usually you and I are very much on the same page, me and Brandy. You
know? Yep, and I'm the one that's kind of off to the side or in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, I just felt like we were circling around and saying the same things over again, so...
We were.
I would like to break out of this roundabout we're on and talk about the rest of the stuff. So, yeah, Michael has been requested...
Parliament.
...to come...
Big Ben. Parliament. Big Ben.
All that talk about like a Star Trek West Wing, and I think we're getting it here, is Michael's involvement in all this politics stuff. We get our Star Trek West Wing. And so kind of a hint as to what that would be.
Okay. I'm sorry for giggling through all of that.
That's fine.
Dave, you didn't think that was funny?
I didn't quite catch it.
Oh.
You could explain it, Chris, and then he'd understand.
European vacation when they're caught on the roundabout.
Oh yeah, that's
Parliament.
Right.
Big Ben.
Big Ben.
Yeah,
Parliament. Big Ben.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it.
Star Trek
the
West Wing.
From European vacation that always comes back to me is the cyclist that gets hit by a car and keeps apologizing.
Was he from Canada?
Like he's the one in the wrong? No, it's just in. in England and Europe and stuff that, you know, pedestrians and cyclists, they don't have the right of way. So
you
hit a cyclist and they have to apologize to you. Mm. At least that's the way it is in Germany.
Mm. Interesting. Michael has...
West Wing.
Michael has to go to the West Wing. She is asked to speak on behalf of the peaceful solution, the peaceful first contact thing. And she doesn't agree to it, but neither does she say no. It's interesting how the president has to navigate these things. And she's absolutely right. She obviously has a specific belief about what mm-hmm. they should do, but she has to remain impartial to everyone else. So whatever she wants isn't necessarily what's going to happen. That's why, again, she goes to Michael to fix her problem, so to speak.
Like she did in
as a puppet master.
Like she did with the Vulcan, the Navarans.
I really honestly don't think it's a puppet master sort of thing. I really think it's more of just she knows what Michael is capable of now and mm-hmm. is, I wouldn't say using her to the best of her abilities so much as asking for her help.
There is this kind of, I mean, it is manipulative. But it's manipulative in that political way of directing somebody in the way you could utilize them. As she sees the potential in Michael to sway minds and opinions and how to use that effectively.
Honestly, I've seen admirals do the same thing to Picard on a far worse level. So compared to some of the bad admirals we've seen in the past, this is pretty tame. It's like, I need you to argue for the peaceful solution.
And isn't this the worst setup for a consulate ever? It's like this long tube with rotating, like, images. You can't even look fixed at the image of the president. It's rotating, and so your eyes would be going, like, from left to right the whole time. And it's just this, like, an elevator shaft of people.
It's not practical.
Just stacked on top of each other. It's like, of all the places to hold any kind of meeting or vote, they chose that?
I got nothing on that.
It's a horrible design for something
like that. I'm trying to think of how that could possibly be a good idea, and I can't come up with anything.
And everybody was standing. It's so ableist. I mean,
and the legs, like the floors and everything. Yeah. It's just like, it's not designed well. But I do love these, again, with me and the like undiscovered country stuff mm-hmm. and like the Kittimer Accord. I love these. I know mm-hmm. I'm sure that there are lots of fans that think that, oh, it's so boring
it's
and blah, blah, blah. I hate this political stuff, but I really get off on these kind of scenes in Star Trek. Cause to me, this is when they are showing what the building of Star Trek Federation ideals and all that kind of stuff is like. And I love that.
Yeah. It's reminiscent of, like in the Star Wars prequels with the consulate there, when you had all the pods with the different, mm-hmm. you know, planets and systems and such with E.T. and everybody.
Yeah, there was
Can I ask a question?
The squid people and stuff. So.
Do y'all get an Oogie feeling from Rilik still?
No. I don't think she has any kind of personal agenda.
Personality? I'm just kidding.
No, I actually... I think that she is doing her best as far as being the figurehead for the Federation and Starfleet. Because, yes, Vance is basically mm-hmm. the head of Starfleet. So she and he work close together. But when it comes right down to it, she's top dog. And she's carrying a really heavy burden. She is the Federation president at a time of rebuilding, which is one of the hardest jobs to do when it was the burn and trying to figure out the burn and all of this stuff had already fallen apart, but now she's trying to put it back together. Frankly, she's doing a good job of it. They've already more than doubled the number of planets or systems back in the Federation,
including Earth and Titan.
I appreciated seeing Earth represented again. That made me happy.
Even
though they haven't rejoined yet, I think that they will eventually.
Do you think we'll move back to San Francisco?
I don't know. I don't think so. But it's hard to say. Well, Starfleet headquarters was in San Francisco.
I think it's just that space station now. It's just that Starbase.
Well, yeah, I know that it's that, but...
Which kind of makes
sense. I wonder if they tore all that stuff down on Earth, all the Starfleet stuff. I don't know.
I hope not.
Probably just reutilized it for Earth defense.
Yeah, well, you know, they have programmable matter now. They could build a building in like a day. So I'm not worried about that aspect of it. But I actually have come to have some respect for Rylik. And I truly feel that she has everyone's best interests at heart, and she has to walk a very tight line. And that's why she has to ask people like Michael to help her do her job, because she does have to remain impartial. She cannot be seen as weak, and she cannot be seen as taking sides, because that sends a message to everyone else. And that just breeds chaos.
Yeah, she can't appear to have an agenda. Yeah.
So I'm...
Why do non-Federation members get a vote?
Because it threatens everybody. It's threatening their entire universe, this DMA.
And I guess even just voting together is a good sign of faith.
Yeah. Moth Emperor was there. Yeah. That was an accomplishment.
Oh, yeah.
I loved seeing him again.
Ferengi curmudgeon again.
Got to see a Zindi insectoid. Or two.
I missed that one.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
There was a Zindi?
Yeah, it was standing next to the Moth King, if I remember correctly.
Oh my God. I need to rewatch.
I missed it the first time. And then the second time, I thought, that's an insectoid. That's a Zindi. Because we know from Star Trek Enterprise that the Zindi joined Starfleet in the 26th century. So. Right. We know that they're in there.
Where the hell's the Klingons?
I don't know. Maybe they've destroyed themselves.
Yeah, I have been wondering about Klingons lately.
Yeah, I have been thinking about it too. But at the same time, we had so much Klingon stuff in season one and, you know, a little bit of season two that I just, I'm okay with not knowing about them for a while. I don't need any stories involving them. Put one of them in a shot somewhere at Starfleet headquarters. That's fine. But I don't need to know how they're doing. I care more about, what's going on with the Betazoids? You know, these are the things I think about. What's going on with the Betazoids? What's going on with the Andorians?
What's going on with the Founders, Changelings?
Dominion. Yeah, what's going on with the Jem'Hadar? Do they even exist anymore? Yeah. How are the Prophets faring? Do we still have that wormhole to the Gamma Quadrant? These are things that I want to know.
Well, that's something I think Rylik says. There's delegates from all four quadrants.
Yes, she does say that. All four. Mm. That means Alpha, Beta, Gamma, and Delta.
Delta.
Crazy. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh my gosh, were there Kazons there? Imagine if there were Kazons.
You didn't like them, right?
Well, there might have been, because it's been, 1,000 years or so, or somewhere around
there. Well, it's been about, I guess, about 800 years since the time of 800? Voyager. So, just these are things that I think about when I see all of those people in that hall and don't really get a good look at all of them.
And the way that they have a show of hands vote was interesting. What if you don't have hands, though?
You have somebody vote by proxy for you? I don't know. Yeah. It seemed like
maybe
there's probably some other
sensors.
Way to gesture.
I mean, just push a button.
Yeah, something like that.
Green with your nose, red for no.
Yeah, maybe it just responds if you like you breathe on it. Then it just.
And for those nerds that really love Easter eggs, each time somebody votes, either yay or nay, their symbol shows up on a little scoreboard kind of thing. Kind of like the red versus blue states kind of map.
Yep. And there was the Zindi symbol in there.
Who did the Zindi vote for?
I think I said on Unready Room that they voted for action, but I think it was actually they voted for peaceful contact, if I remember correctly.
Oh, go Zindi.
Which I think is the clever way of doing it, to vote for peace rather than vote for war. Because to have people raise their hands to consent to a violent act seems aggressive.
Yeah, and that's why Rylik said, if you want a peaceful solution, you know, raise your hand. If you don't raise your hand.
While on their topic of Rylik, this happens with a lot of people in leadership, is when it comes to order and justice, they prefer the order side of things. So those people that want revenge are kind of thinking of it in justice terms, that there's like eye for an eye, tooth for tooth kind of thing. But with Rilik, it's like it's better for there to be order, even if it doesn't seem quite just or fair to some people.
Book is thinking in terms of avenging, but that is no different than revenge. I mean, it sounds better, but it's really not, because basically it's, oh, they did this bad thing to me. I'm going to do a bad thing to them. Oh, their descendants do a bad thing to my descendants. My descendants do a bad thing to their descendants. And it never ends. It never ends.
It would be one thing if destroying the DMA was just to stop it from continuing to damage anything. But if destroying the DMA actually would damage more things and potentially damage the source from where it came from, that's a whole other thing. There is a revenge aspect. There is that strike me, I'll strike you back kind of attitude here. Is, you know, just getting one's lump of flesh for damages.
And you would think that people in the 31st century or whatever, 32nd century, where are we, 3189? Yeah, that's it. That they would have evolved past that, but apparently not. Apparently, people of any particular genetic makeup can still be completely horrible.
Well, if you look at the way people of a certain type look at anybody who crosses our border seeking asylum, that they automatically assume the worst, that they're going to steal their jobs, that they're here for criminal means, not that they're here for a better life and escaping the dangers of where they live before. You know, that's what seeking asylum is all about. But no, it's that they're criminals because they've illegally entered the country, even though you have to actually cross a border to seek asylum. That's part of the deal. That it's the same kind of scenario where the unknown, we fear it, therefore we must destroy it.
Yeah.
Or prevent it from being anywhere near us.
Because God forbid we remember what the Statue of Liberty says on it. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Yes, let's not do that.
Or even that Jesus was an immigrant, a refugee. Mm-hmm. People seem to forget that.
Yep. You know who else was? Superman.
Superman, yeah.
He was a refugee and literally an alien.
And did he ever get a citizen status? I don't know.
Well, probably. I'm sure that he did because of how he was born. So I don't know if Superman specifically did, probably, but definitely Clark did.
I think so. I think Clark Kent, like the president would have given him citizenship or something.
Personally, I think Superman should just be a citizen of the world. And Clark can do what he wants.
Oh, globalism.
Oh my God, yes, wanting us to all be one big happy family. What a terrible thing to say. So sorry about that.
Damn globalists.
Yeah, some people really hate globalism.
We're all in this.
They tend to be nationalists, but
we're all in this together. And isn't that what the future of Star Trek shows us, is globalism?
Well, yeah, that's why some people don't like it so much anymore. Because they're like, oh, wait a minute.
It's been like that since the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it's just there's some people that look at their own politics as like it being a sport and there's teams versus each other.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's to be gained from that, because anytime there's competition, there's a winner and a loser. So
division.
Why can't everybody win?
Yeah.
By eliminating this sense of tribalism and nationalism and just be humanist. Mm-hmm. But hey, that's me.
Yeah, me too. Okay, we are spending a lot of time on everything. Yeah.
Well, do you think we addressed enough? Because we talked about there being a divide now between Book and Michael because they have diametrically opposed views of how to approach the DMA. And that's going to be
split. I'm not done with everything in that particular part of the story.
Okay.
Two things. One, I love that Rilik like almost tries to guilt Michael into speaking by looking at her when she says, is there anyone else who will speak on behalf of the opposing side? Mm-hmm. And then she just kind of looks at Michael and looks at Michael.
It's motherly.
Yeah, it is.
The way she
actually
guilts her into it.
And then she turns back and she says very crisply, it seems there will be no further remarks. Then Michael's like, okay, Mom, Actually, I feel that she felt that she had to do that. She didn't want to do it because she didn't want to publicly oppose Book, but she also knew what was at stake and knew she couldn't not speak up.
All the more reason that it's a big conflict of interest right now, in this moment.
Well, Michael's going to do the right thing. And maybe Book has, of course, remembering the thing that he imagined his father said about how she would choose Starfleet every time. And I don't think that that's true. I think she's choosing peace and discovery, mm-hmm. not the ship, but just general discovery and exploration instead of war. So, which is always preferred to choose that over war. But I got to talk about my favorite couple, Tarina and Saru. Saru bringing her a succulent. And she's almost smiling while they're talking. And he's explaining that fluids of this succulent will flavor her salt tea for her. Yeah. And it should be able to exist on Vulcan because it grew in an equatorial, hot, dry region of Kaminar.
That was dirty. Yeah. That was dirty.
It was dirty and great. I loved it. And she smiled, y'all. She
did.
Smiled. And I was there for it. Loved it. Loved it.
For Nagvaran, she's just giddy. Mm-hmm. Giddy.
Her ears are pointy for
Her ears were so pointy.
Bing.
Yep.
They perked right up as soon as she saw him. She waited for him.
Fully erect.
Yeah, she waited for him. Because he was hurrying to, you know, because he had gotten done with the stuff that he needed to do, and he was hurrying to see if he could catch her before she left, and she was absolutely hanging around just waiting for him, but making it seem like she wasn't waiting for him, because she
talk about a power couple.
Yeah, she had plenty of time before their return to Navarre, and I'm just like, oh, you too.
He's like waiting on, oh, you're still here? Oh, I didn't see you.
Oh, no, I haven't left yet. I still have some time before I have to go.
Needed to work on something here for a second. Oh, cool. Hey, what's
just
up?
Just chatting with people and stuff and things.
Just waiting for my friend.
Yeah.
I love how intellectualism and talk about culture is like their foreplay.
Yeah.
Yep. And tea. Tea is also their foreplay.
And tea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cultural.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I still want to see more of that. And I really hope that they give us more of that in the last four episodes. So, yeah. Long story short, Book does the stupid thing. And, I remember what I was going to say. I think that when you are having this kind of legislative body assembly, that no one should be able to bamf in next to the fucking president of the Federation.
No. No.
Like, not within, 15 feet radius. You should not be able to do that.
Yeah, there should be something around her that prevents it from
happening. There should be a dampening
field. Kind of security field.
Yeah, dampening field. Yeah. So that you can't just bamf in next to her. What the fuck was that?
No. Yeah. No, ma'am.
But then Star Trek's always been known for its terrible security. I mean, you look at Next Generation, how often people get on the bridge.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like ridiculous. There's no security at all.
Yeah. No, it's true of all of the Star Trek series in one way or another. Mm-hmm. They're all terrible with security. The visual of Book ship jumping was really cool.
That was really cool.
It was very pretty.
Yeah.
I like how Book is like questioning the new spore drive. He's like, that's it? He's like, what, you being compact and easy to move about is bad?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not as gigantic as the one on Discovery. Mm-hmm. He's just, oof.
Yeah, that feature not a bug comment too that Tarka gives. Mm-hmm. Oh, he just rubs me the wrong way.
I liked that comment.
I do not
though.
Like him. Yeah. That, oh, this could have, you know, an effect that not only destroys this, but destroys subspace and possibly goes back to the source. He says, feature, not a bug. As in, we want to hurt the area to make it so they can't go through that space again.
Yeah, because, with their immense power, they couldn't possibly build another ship and come through somewhere else.
There's, kind of a slimy attitude to him, like a used car salesman.
Oh, absolutely.
Like one of those lawyers, you know, ambulance chasers, that he's going to twist any kind of thing to favor his point of
view.
Yeah,
well, that was apparent from the first time he set foot on Discovery.
Yeah. And his impatience in getting the information he needed regarding the DNA.
Yeah, he's a bully.
Yeah, he is a bully. Which makes me wonder if he's telling the truth about his original universe.
I don't know.
Because it seems like if it was that great of a place, why is he such an asshole?
If I remember correctly, it wasn't that. It was they had found a place where there was no burn, no this, no that, and they were going to go there to live out their lives in peace.
Well, we've already learned from Kovich that
you can't
be from a parallel universe and subsist in a universe that's not your own. You're going to decay after
a while. Yeah, because they're pulling apart.
With
the universe is still expanding, and so those universes are pulling apart. And the further apart they get, the more you start to disassemble.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm. So if he's going off to a universe they found that is peaceful, that's not sustainable. But then he seems to be the next step kind of guy rather than looking further down the road than that. It's like, what can I get now as opposed to what's going to affect me later?
Yeah, that's pretty much sums him up. So fuck him and the horse he rode in on, and he'll get his, I firmly believe. And I can't wait to see it. Are we done with this part and can talk about Zora?
Yeah.
Okay.
Zora in the second half of this two-hour podcast.
See, I told you, Chris, that we were not going to be able to keep it to an hour.
Yeah.
I just know how we are. So now that Zora is refusing to give up the coordinates, Kovich has shown up. Yay!
My favorite new character.
Anytime we get Kovich, Brandy is happy. Yep.
I'm happy too.
Just so good. Just so good.
I very much relate to him. Kind of his deadpan nature, and also that he's very analytical. Mm-hmm. And he's also a good study of, like, human nature, which I appreciate.
And of AI.
Or alien nature. Sentient nature. Consciousness. That's probably the term.
Yeah, this was really his very fascinating part of this story in this one.
Yeah. Well,
some very unexpected moments, in my opinion, from him.
I love that we've gotten more Kovich this season, and I could do with even more, frankly. I just think he's a really strong recurring character, and I've not heard one bad word about him. Not one.
It's cool benefit from filming in Canada that you get this famous Canadian director to appear on your program. And his son's really cool, too. He's very much following his father's footsteps with a lot of body horror type science fiction stories that really kind of explore what it means to be human, that whole thing. Like a thing about being able to clone meat.
Mm.
I like Cronenberg a lot, and I love his portrayal of Kovich. And he really, I mean, he just owns this episode.
Does.
It's great.
And he owns Stamets. That was the thing that I was like,
yeah.
Oh.
And Stamets is like nods and goes, I concur exactly with your findings.
Yeah. Well, let's not skip to the end yet.
Yeah. I know, but I just can't get over that part. I was just like, I had like a brain, one of those emojis, brain explode emojis.
Somebody on Twitter was talking about, you know, who would be your best friend? Who would you want to be your best friend out of all of the Star Trek characters? And somebody said they'd really like just this family of Gray and Adira and Culber and Stamets. And then I was like, what about Kovich as like the granddad too? Because he's got that kind of energy. It's like he's been so involved with those four characters that, you know, now he'd be like a fifth.
Well, if I can...
I'm wearing my Found Family sweatshirt today.
Nice.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
If I could only choose from current characters, then I would absolutely choose Tilly, because Tilly.
Yeah.
Of course.
If I could choose any character, it would be Tilly and Spock.
You. I choose
diametrically
opposed. It'd be the closest thing to cloning yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Let's have Tilly. So we have a problem with Zora.
Is it a problem, though? I knew exactly why Zora was doing what she was doing, and I knew that it was going to cause a problem. And I was surprised that Stamets was so vehement about it, and not in a bad way. He was a far cry from his outbursts in earlier seasons. He's come a long way.
True.
And he comes in, because Saru's waiting there with Kovach, and he comes in with Culber and tells Zora to play some loud music, and then says, okay, group hug. And everybody's looking at him like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
And would that work anyway?
No.
Because if you think of Zora as being like a Hal, Hal could read lips.
There's no way.
If you're not facing her, though, she wouldn't be able to read your lips. Yeah.
And I like that Kovach makes the really good decision here, is like transparency is key. That you have to be open and honest for this to work.
Yeah.
Yes. This is why I like when you think about like when Michael outlogicked the computer on the Sencho. Mm-hmm. They kind of try to do that with Zora, but it's like, no, that's not the right thing to do. You can't manipulate her into getting what you want, because she's a real live thinking being. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not going to be the same. Yeah. It's not the same thing. You're not talking to the same type of, it's not just an interface, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier today, is that, you can't create some kind of logic problem with Zora because she's an emotional being now. She has thoughts and feelings and hopes and desires and fears. And so you have to address those things too. So you have to approach her like you would like another person.
Yeah.
Because she essentially is
that. She is she is a sentient emotional entity that lives within the computer aboard Star Trek Discovery. Aboard the Starship Discovery is what I meant to say. Excuse me. We've seen this coming since towards the end of season 2. There is that episode where they can't extract the sphere data, and so they are going to destroy Discovery. That's the only thing that they can think of to do to stop control. And so they all evacuate to the Enterprise, which is one of the coolest sequences I have ever seen, when they come up alongside each other and those temporary bridges go out and activate, you know, with shields to so that you don't die from asphyxiation and your blood freezing and all that. It's just really cool. Just to see them so close together like that. It was just so pretty. Sorry, this isn't a season 2 discussion, but then they fire, you know, the self-destruct gets turned off by what was a burgeoning Zora, because she was protecting herself. She may not...
Ooh, burgeoning.
Burgeoning. Thank you. Big words tonight. Then they tried firing a photon torpedo, and that's when Michael has one of her visions, and we see a lot of the future. Thankfully, it doesn't all happen the way that she sees it, because she made some choices to prevent that. Nice to know that's possible. So that was the first time we really see that the sphere data has merged with Discovery, and this is now becoming an entity. But we don't really know. I mean, we have an idea that it's going to become Zora, because we've seen the short trek Calypso, but we don't know exactly how that transition is going to come. And just like any kind of evolution, whether it's organic or not, she's just evolved. She has grown, her knowledge has grown, and she has become a living, thinking, even though she doesn't breathe, but she has become a life form all of her own. But they have to get down to brass tacks before they can determine that. And that's why Kovach is just so upfront and just saying, no, we're here to we're here to talk about this, and we're here to find out what's going to happen. And he asks Zora if she understands why he's there, and she says yes. And basically everybody is fine with it except for Stamets. And of course, Gray and Adira show up, and they want to talk on behalf of Zora because of their experiences, especially Gray's experiences with her. It's just going back and forth, and Zora is just like, I have to protect you guys. The moment when Kovach says for her to state her primary function, and she says to care for the crew of Discovery, and he's like, that wasn't the primary function you were originally given. She says, no, I chose that. And at that moment, I'm just like, oh. And that whole situation made me emotional, but it got really emotional for me towards the end, because it's always difficult to try and convince somebody that you're different than the way that they see you. And that's basically what Stamets, we have to do with Stamets in this whole storyline. So even when she creates the kill switch, he's still feeling better about it, but he's not 100% on board. You know, after they've had this discussion and Kovach is basically readying his findings, Stamets comes back and he says, you know, I'm still not okay with this, and maybe you could hold off on your evaluation. And he said, oh, you had an idea? And he said, yes. And his idea is to allow Zora to become a member of Starfleet. Then she is bound by their rules, regulations, code of conduct, all of those things. And she's totally on board with it.
Well, yeah, she wants to be a member of the family.
She does. She wants to be part of the crew. Yeah. She wants to be in Starfleet. She agrees. And Kovach says it's a wonderful idea. And everybody's happy. And then Stamets says, well, you can get rid of this failsafe, this kill switch that you made. And she says, well, it wouldn't be much of a failsafe if I could disarm it myself. And so he takes it apart and disarms it. And that's when he asks Kovach, well, Kovach says, well, my evaluation's done anyway. And he says, well, what if I hadn't come up with the solution, if I hadn't been on board with this, what would your decision have been? He said, would you really have extracted Zora? And he says, no, I would have recommended that you be transferred to another ship. And we know how the old Stamets would react to that kind of statement. Yes. And this Stamets doesn't even miss a beat and says, as it should be.
You know, it just occurred to me that Stamets is kind of playing the Bruce Maddox role in this episode.
It was very Measure of a Man.
As in Measure of a Man.
Everybody has had Measure of the Man vibes. Measure of a Man vibes.
Yes, there are parallels
Thank
for sure.
Thank you, Melinda Snodgrass, whom I have met in person. Mm. She is wonderful and very intelligent and delightful. And yeah, I adore her. She's tiny. She's like 5 foot nothing. Boy, she's a little powerhouse.
Stamets brings up an interesting thing about trust, is that if you expect us to trust you, Zora, you're going to have to trust us, that we can go to the source of the DMA and do what's in our power to protect ourselves and do so in a careful, cautious, you know, intelligent way. And she thinks about that for a moment and she's like, well, I didn't figure that into my parameters in protecting the crew. You're correct. You know, it's not something she even addressed, is like, oh, yeah, they're going to try to protect themselves, too. It's not all on my shoulders, my big starship shoulders, to protect the crew at all things. You know, they're able to protect themselves as well.
Yeah. And there's one thing that I forgot to mention, and that is the big turning point was finding out that Zora dreams.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
this was interesting that she has like a subconscious. Mm-hmm. And even psychologists today aren't in total agreement that the subconscious even exists. So it's an interesting thing to present in, you know, this science fiction story, that a subconscious mind is an indication of independent thought and, I guess, sentience.
Yes, well, as Kovach said, no AI has ever dreamed without being programmed to dream. Right. And because she can dream, that means she's not an artificial intelligence.
Huh, I wonder if this ties into the Philip K. Dick stuff, like with Blade Runner, you know, do androids dream of electric sheep? Is that whole thing is, when does a replicant, when does some kind of artificial life become life? You know, where's that border? Where do you cross from one into the other?
Yeah, well, isn't it all just arbitrary?
And I guess dreaming.
Isn't it kind of arbitrary in some ways? It's like,
well, it's like taxonomy, like how we decide what's a bird, what's a fish, what's a mammal. It's all arbitrary, is what we decided. Yeah. It's not written in stone anywhere. It's a bunch of scientists, a bunch of biologists deciding, okay, if it's got feathers, it's this. Okay, that has feathers, but it also gives live birth, so I guess it's a mammal. You know, there's cases where things fall out of these neat little boxes we try to set up to organize the world.
Platypus.
And that's kind of an issue I have with, like, certain hardline scientists looking at mathematics as being the language of the universe, the language of science, when it's something we've invented to describe the universe around us. So it's already flawed that we're already assigning our values, you know, 1, 2, 3, pi, all these mathematical figures and stuff to describe the universe we're in. Mathematics wasn't there to begin with.
Yeah.
It's the things we've observed and assigned values to. And I think some mathematicians and scientists and physicists kind of forget that part of it, that they act like it was already there.
But like Fibonacci sequence and stuff like that, that occurs in nature.
Yeah but it, through our observance of it, right? And then we assign that sequence to the thing we observe. So is it really there?
That's a good question, Dave. Because when it comes right down to it, isn't everything that has existed that we assign values to, isn't all of it made up by us? It's just we just accept it as standard. Yeah, what we perceive
because we is real it. Because the way we see, the way we hear, the way we taste, the things we smell, all these things affect our judgment and isn't going to be the same way like an insect views the world.
Right. And it's our reality is just a projection anyway. Like it's, it's our own
We're
projection.
On the Matrix.
Even our memories are constructed in a manner that suits us. And so there's going to be things that embarrass us that we might want to forget. And so suddenly we're a hero of our own story when we're actually doing some pretty bad stuff. But we excuse it for some reason to feel better about ourselves. And then your memory shifts. Yeah. It's like when somebody might tell a joke and then you tell that joke and suddenly it becomes your joke. And you forget about who said it in the first place.
Yeah, that's just human nature.
It's like just with perception and like our reality being a projection. Like I always had this idea of, let's say we look at something that's yellow and I say that's yellow and you agree that's yellow. But the way that I see yellow might not be the same way that you see yellow. If I was looking at it through your eyes, I might see pink, but I know that it's yellow because we've all agreed that that specific color is yellow, even though we might see it differently, you know?
Well, there's a very real world account of this, and that's in certain Asian cultures, they don't really have, I think it's the color green. It's blue. Blue and green are the same thing. And so with traffic lights, it's going to be like red, yellow, and blue, not green.
I remember that.
When they finally designate Zora as a new life form, and she's going to join Starfleet, and she says, I feel seen. And this is this is a theme that is being, that is run throughout this entire season. It's run through the threads of Tilly. It's run through the threads of Adira and Gray, especially Gray. It's run through the thread of Zora. Book.
Even Book.
Yeah.
Knowing that Leto saw him and responded to his calls of love, that call was answered. That was so important to him. And he wants to see his grief and his anger seen. And he feels like it's not. That he has, you know, this deep loss that nobody else seems to understand.
Disagree.
Maybe that relates to the DMA, too.
I disagree that nobody understands. Michael fucking understands. Yeah. But
I'm just saying, from his perspective, I'm not saying that they don't understand, because I think a lot of them do understand his loss. It's just, I don't think Book sees
it.
He doesn't feel like
he's being seen.
He doesn't
want to see it. He wants to believe that he's the only one that's ever felt this way because it's easier.
Yeah. Every single person on the Discovery who came, who jumped 930 years in the future, understands.
He has an entire ship
of people who understand.
He doesn't have any frame of reference for that, though. He can't grasp that. How difficult it was for them to be part of this future from and giving up their entire lives, their family, their friends, everything they've ever known to do this.
Immediately, everyone that they knew is dead for hundreds and hundreds of years. But like he spent a year with Michael. I'm sure that they had conversations about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But again, he's, as I said before, being very childish right now. And I don't think it will last. I think he's going to get smacked really hard.
I think he's going to have to be confronted with what Tarka is and what Tarka wants and make that decision. If he, if his desire for revenge is, you know, the cost of that, the price of that is worth whatever damage may be caused.
I wonder if the DMA, its constructors, if there's something related to being seen there. And is there a way also that Book maybe somehow starts to understand the DMA and its creators? Is there a way that Book is like, oh, I get this. I understand what this is and who they are, you know?
Well, Saru, his discussion with Saru already kind of set that up. The potential of, you know, still being angry at your enemy for past trauma, but looking beyond that to a better future.
I hope his empathy thing kicks in. Anyway.
Yeah, I wonder what that applies to and what it doesn't. It seems to specifically work with, like, lower life forms.
I don't
like
think animals. It's necessarily lower life forms. I think it's just organic beings or beings with a consciousness because he couldn't connect with those beetles on the prison planet. And prison asteroid, I guess. And that was because they were mechanical. They weren't actually, they didn't have a consciousness. So I think it has...
Maybe the DMA is a new life form, too. Yeah.
So I would... I don't know. I don't know if the DMA in and of itself is a life form.
Yeah.
Or whether it's a vessel.
I'm just thinking about reading Tarka, you know.
I don't know. I just don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. And I don't want to make any more speculation about it because we have six fucking weeks until it's back.
And you haven't seen any other episodes yet, right?
No. Okay,
I've seen the newest episode of Prodigy last week, though.
Ooh, can't wait.
All I can say is, it's a lot. It's a lot.
I'm waiting for Janeway to be like, I knew who y'all were all along.
I can't see.
I was testing you.
I can't
see
anything about it. One thing I don't think that we've talked about at all is that...
I know you're going to say this.
Gray's going back to Trill for a while. And I think, again, it's this rotation of how many people they can have on set that they can rotate through because of COVID.
It's making a weird series, but also for some reason it makes it feel more realistic. It feels more like a workplace
show, where there are rotating people on the crew around. That are on the bridge on duty because Detmer and Awoshikun are not on the bridge 24/7. They're just not. So
I think that Gray is becoming a guardian is awesome too, and I like that Gray has a big part in the future of Trill. You know, and Adira, obviously, because they're a human that successfully joined. Yep.
I just feel that we just barely got him, and now we're losing him.
But we don't know.
But they'll probably have like cuts to maybe Trill to see how Gray's doing.
I don't know how they're going to work that, but what I do know is that he'll be back, and so will Adira.
Mm-hmm. And you know who else is going to be back?
Tilly.
Nan.
Oh, yes, I saw Nan.
Oh, yeah, because we saw.
I forgot about that. I forgot about that.
My Nan. Bring her to me, please.
I had a feeling we would see her again because they don't have people make statements on Discovery that aren't followed through.
No, and I love her so much.
I do, too.
She's an Enterprise OG now.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
She's OG Enterprise.
Yeah, now, bitches. You know? OG Enterprise Nan. And her hair is glorious. I can't get enough of just all of her. Just all of it.
Yeah.
Rachel Angerill, we love you.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Do we have anything else to say about this episode?
I have one thing, and that's the rank they give Zora. Specialist.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost the lowest rank of a non-commissioned officer right above private.
It's what Burnham was after.
So Zora can... order like just basic shipmen around and assign duties and determine that everybody's qualified for their tasks. But anything above that, corporal, sergeant, master sergeant, any ensign can order Zora to do whatever. So it's kind of nice to have the ship's computer not have too much authority.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because they never made it seem like specialist was associated with any kind of rank. Because they made it very clear when Lorca made Burnham a specialist that she had no rank insignia.
Right.
So,
rank, none.
Yes, exactly.
Specialist Burnham to the bridge.
So I guess they could go in that direction, but I kind of like the idea that there's little tiny instances where Zora can actually give orders, but for the most part, anybody on the ship can can ask Zora to do whatever.
Okay, anything else we have to say?
I'm good. I do want to say I like the hiatus. I'm glad that we have a break. I know that this is another place in which Brandy and I disagree.
Yep. I want it all now. God damn it.
I like delayed gratification.
I'll say people's response to this episode. More. Yeah, that's true. Anticipation.
Anticipation.
That
nerds.
Oh man, what was I saying? Oh yeah, the response to this episode I think might depend on how familiar people are to living intelligent spaceships, because it's been a long trope in science fiction. If you look at Red Dwarf, if you look at Starscape or Farscape, that's the one.
Farscape with Moya.
That, you know, certain ships have a personality. There are living beings that, if you're not familiar with that, it's going to seem unusual or maybe the wrong decision. But there are benefits to having a living ship that we hopefully will see in future episodes of
Wasn't
Discovery.
Remember the organic ship? It was Next Gen, right?
There was a Next Gen episode where they had an organic ship.
Yeah. Early, I think.
Yeah.
I think Doctor Who's explored that too. Oh, mm-hmm. The TARDIS technically has a personality.
And feelings. Yeah. It's not an unheard of concept. And most people, I say most, not all, who watch Star Trek tend to be fans of science fiction in general.
Yeah.
And so probably have had experience with a living ship life form, is my guess.
Yes.
Well, I mean, certainly they have experience with the idea of AI developing some sort of evolution or potential sentience or something like that.
Is even gone beyond that,
right?
To where it is a life form, has gone beyond our visual intelligence to be sentience. Yeah.
In discussing Measure of a Man, it also reminded me of, and I can't remember the name of the episode, it might be ridiculously simple and I'm just forgetting it, when Data makes a child, he makes Lol.
Right.
And she achieves emotional intelligence very, very
quickly. And it goes wrong because it went so right.
Yeah, and her positronic net
the
collapsed.
The offspring.
Thank you. I wanted to say the child, and I knew it wasn't the child, but that's it's the offspring.
That's the Troy
Keep
one.
Keep them separated.
So it's not like we haven't seen that before in some form or another, but this is definitely a different way to take it and something that they haven't really done with a main ship in Star Trek.
It is an adjustment for me, I will admit. It's a little bit like, we're definitely in uncharted waters. And so like, I'm a little, like what I need to do, because season four, in the last few seasons of Discovery and during podcasting, I would see the episode two or three times before podcasting about it. And for this season, I've only seen each episode one time. So I think during this hiatus, I'm going to go back and rewatch all of the first half, and just kind of like, without having to talk about it right away, without discussing each other's opinions, and just kind of do my own little journey with it and see where we are before we come back.
Cool. I find it telling that with Star Trek Discovery being such an emotionally intelligent show that even the starship itself would have emotions and feelings and thoughts.
It makes sense, right?
Yeah. It just fits the series.
It does.
It does.
And that crew.
It leaves the possibilities for the future like totally open-ended because how long does Zora live? Are we going to have like in 2,000 years? Zora could still be around. Mm-hmm. You know, there could be more Zoras, you know?
Yeah. Could Zora reproduce?
Right. Exactly.
Very interesting. And that's I think, the greatest part about Discovery is that they rooted us in what we knew, and then they spat us out into the unknown, and they did it so brilliantly that I just really appreciate the way that the show has evolved.
It's jarring sometimes. It really is. Like, I'm just like, what? Oh, what? In some ways, we have to redefine what Star Trek is on a weekly basis, which is great. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not complaining about that at all. Because that means that I have to grow and evolve with it too. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I like challenging material. I think
even with the book situation for me, you know, it's challenging for me for her to be in this position.
Yep.
For there to be this non-Starfleet ship inside of a Starfleet ship all the time. The captain's dating someone who is not Starfleet, who is not Federation, and he's living there. Like, I'm like, what? No.
Well, where else is he going to live? He doesn't have a home now.
Yeah, okay. Well, bleeding heart over here. I'm just kidding.
Sorry, I'm always going to be the bleeding heart. I'm the epitome of the bleeding heart liberal, and I do not apologize.
No, you shouldn't.
I know. I shouldn't. Okay, it is time for, hey, what do you like? Let's start with, who did we start with last week? I can't remember.
We started with you for the first time.
You with me? Oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then it's Dave's turn to go first.
It's my turn. I was on Twitter, and I caught this tweet of somebody saying that they had this shirt saying the best X-Men are women. And this person got a little bit of flack for that because there's all those Wolverine dudes, even though Wolverine's one of these characters that never, you know, he's an outsider, never really quite thinks he's an X-Men, never fits in with the X-Men. Mm-hmm. And when I was reading the X-Men, the women were cool. We had Rogue, we had Storm, we had Shadow Cat, Magic sometimes.
Jean Grey
and her daughter from an alternate future, Phoenix. Psylocke, and there was Dazzler. Yes, Dazzler. I am a fan of Dazzler. There's a lot of people that hate that character. And so I was just mentioning, you know, this list of characters, and then it created this discussion about Dazzler, and a bunch of fans of hers came out and were like, imagine Dazzler who can convert sound into light if she were to experience the Black Bolt shout. What she could do with that.
Ooh.
And somebody found a bit in the comic where it happens. And so he does his destructive shout thing, and she converts it into light and lasers him, and he burns his ass. And so it's canon that Dazzler, who's this pop singer, you know, that often uses her mutant abilities to create a laser light show in her, like, Blondie-like performances, just completely zaps one of the most powerful Inhumans in the Marvel Cinematic or Marvel Universe, period.
But he doesn't die, right?
No, he just gets singed.
Yeah. Okay.
Burned his butt.
He gets singed.
Which is funny, because Black Bolt was performed by Anson Mount in the short-lived and very problematic television series Inhumans.
That was the first time I ever saw him.
Me too.
But it's a role he enjoyed. Yeah, because he couldn't speak in it. So he, as an actor, he had to find other ways to convey his performance.
And he was very good at it.
Yep. So he'd do a lot of microaggression type facial expressions and stuff.
Yeah, I didn't even know what he sounded like until Star Trek Discovery Season 2.
Yeah.
Had no idea. I'm like, oh, I like his voice too. That's just fine. That's just fine. Well, that's very cool.
Also in Hell on Wheels, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes. But I hadn't seen Hell on Wheels. I didn't even know about Hell on Wheels at that point.
So if you take those three performances from the same actor, they're so vastly different that you really get to see his range as an actor.
He good.
Yeah,
he good at his job.
He good.
He good. Okay. I'm going to go second just to spice things up.
Ooh.
Fun.
Yeah.
Take the reins.
And so I have so many things that I could have chosen, and it's been hard to narrow it down. But I'm going to go with something that I recently discovered, and it is a group called The Game Hers. And yes,
nice.
It's Game Hers. And
Game
it is
Hers.
A gaming group for women. They have their own app, which I have now downloaded and am a part of. It's basically a little bit like Facebook in that regard, but we're all lady gamers. There are all these different groups you can belong to depending on your interests. Of course, I'm part of the pets group, and I shared pictures of Nobi, and everybody fell in love and wanted to scratch his belly. It's just fulfilling, I guess is the word. It's not quite the way I want to express it. To be in a safe place for female gamers, because there aren't a lot of those on the internet. Basically, there's so much toxicity towards female gamers still. What century is this? For fuck's sake. And they are very strict on their violation of their policies.
Right.
Basically is, don't be a dick.
Yeah.
Don't spout bigotry. Don't spout sexism. Don't spout hatred of any kind. You do it, you're out. No second chance. So they police that very, very carefully, and I'm grateful for that. And I've really enjoyed connecting with a lot of these ladies. Like today, somebody said, I just started playing Final Fantasy 13 Part 2. What are other good Final Fantasy games? And I'm like, oh, something I know stuff about. And yeah. So I jumped in with my opinions and such. I just really appreciate that. They do have a Twitter account as well, which is the asterisk game hers, which is GameHers. You can find them on Twitter if you are a lady gamer and so desire to follow them. You can follow them if even if you're a guy. But don't be a dick, because yeah. they will crucify you.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny when a guy comes into a group like that and acts all authoritarian and then gets put down by people who are probably in the gaming industry or probably programmers themselves. There's all this assumption that women don't know anything when it comes to games. I was going to ask, is it just video games, or is there like board games and
tabletop RPGs, everything, every kind of games?
That sounds awesome. Yeah,
it is awesome.
Yeah, I'm in a whole big D&D kind of thing, just because, you know, I've attracted people from talking about D&D on Twitter. You know, you attract a certain group from that, and there's a lot of lady game masters, a lot of lady gamers, you know, role players, cosplayers, all kinds of stuff. So that's really cool.
If I remember correctly, there is a group on the app that is specifically for tabletop RPGs.
Fun.
And other tabletop games. So
Lady Warhammer.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. So, and there are game developers in the app. You know, there's just, there are women from all walks of life, from all across the planet, and from all level of talent. There's a cosplay group. There's an art, fan art group. You know, there are all these wonderful ways to connect with like-minded people. And I have just really enjoyed that, which I've only been a part of the app for about a week, but I'm really, really having a good time with it. So, and last but obviously never, ever least, ever, Chris, what you got?
In the winter, I'm usually watching a lot of TV because my industry is generally, there's not as much going on. Mm-hmm. Even right now during COVID times, which is just during times, it's similar. So I could list a lot of the series that I've been watching, like Hawkeye, Nine Perfect Strangers, Boba just started. I just started watching Chucky, which we talked about
before.
Oh, I heard
that's really good.
I'm enjoying it. It's hokey, but I'm really enjoying it. My like 16-year-old, 15-year-old niece is into it too, so we've been watching it together. But I'm going to go with Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, I want to watch this. I want to watch this. It's on my list.
Yes, I watched it in a few days, and it's got Steve Martin, Martin Short, Selena Gomez, Nathan Lane, Jane Lynch, on and on and on and on, and it is just so smart and funny and dark, and it has Amy, is it Ryan? She's from The Office. She plays the one that Michael ends up marrying. I love her so much. It's just a great cast. And like, what I really love about it is that Steve Martin and Martin Short are obviously, I mean, they're in their 70s. They're like comedy, showbiz, Hollywood royalty, way back, all the way from SNL and like Three Amigos. And then you have Selena Gomez, who is like millennial-ish, and somehow, and they're all three executive producers, and somehow they make all of these worlds, they make both of these worlds work together in this brilliant way. And like, I'm in the middle of those generations. I'm like smack dab in the middle. So I'm just sitting there, and I like, you know, Selena Gomez is amazing. She's really good, smart as heck. And it's just, I really enjoyed the first season quite a bit. And the building in which it takes place actually is a building in which, when I first moved to New York in 2006, the series basically takes place in this building in which I actually went to. One of the first celebrities I ever worked with when I moved to New York 16 years ago now. It's just like, it's cool to see that all happening there. And yeah, It's great. I highly recommend
it. Is it on Apple TV? Is that right? Oh, it's on Hulu. Well, that's why I haven't seen it, because I don't have Hulu.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. And they're like 30, 35-minute episodes, so, you know, it's an easy investment and just really well-written.
Yep.
It was Cyndi Lauper. That's who I worked with.
Oh, my God. I adore Cyndi Lauper. She is such a badass.
Yeah, she is. Wow. Genius. Total genius.
Absolutely. Yeah. Man. Wow. That's amazing. Yay.
Good show.
Yay. Cool, cool. All right, then. Well, I guess it's time to say where people can find us. So let's start in reverse order. Chris, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at CD Littlefield, and that's all I got right now.
That's just fine.
And okay, Brandy, where can we find you?
You can find out what I'm doing at Brandywine12 on Twitter. I do not have the energy or the mental capacity to talk about all the other things that I'm doing. However, this will come out in time for me to talk about Trek Talks that is going to happen on Saturday. God, what day is it? The 15th? Yeah. Saturday the 15th of January. It is basically a streaming telethon for Hollywood Food Coalition, which is headed by our very dear John Billingsley, who followed me back on Twitter. Oh. I don't know what's wrong with him, but we've talked on Twitter. He is amazing, and I love him. He is going to be one of the main hosts and a guest, and literally they are up to 51 guests, not including Billingsley, for this appearance. And we've got people like most of the cast of Enterprise and Nana Visitor and Siroc Lofton, and it's just so many people, and people from behind the scenes like Denise and Michael Okuda and Brandon Braga and Ed Begley Jr. Just all of these people that are connected to Star Trek. And there's still more coming. They haven't even announced them all. And this is being put on by Trek Geeks, which I am a part of, even though the podcast that I was doing hasn't been active for some time. And that's okay. Keep an eye out for that. If I remember correctly, they are going to be streaming it on Facebook. So when more details are available, I'll put them in my Twitter or retweet it from Twitter. So that's the one thing I'll talk about. Dave.
All right, you can find me just living on Twitter. I'm there most of the time. So if you want to contact me, it's at Dark Corner Cast. That's all one word. I host with Brandy the Dark Corner Podcast. It seems like we're going to be getting back into the tarot again, so it'll be fun to discuss the tarot cards. I think our next one to discuss will be Temperance, and then I'll have a music special regarding that. Speaking of music, on my SoundCloud, I just swapped out the previous playlist for a new one. I've got one with a bunch of sexy, groovy tunes on it for Valentine's. After Valentine's, I'll take it down. But it's got bands like Junk Sista, Sciavia, Cosmic Armchair, Mantra Kid. It's got a Noise Unit song on there. That's pretty cool. So, yeah, it's good times.
Good times.
I think it's Noise Unit. It might have been Cyberactive. Now that I'm thinking back to it. Similar artists, you know, like same members, different band name.
Yeah.
Dang Canadians and their prolific electronic music.
Gosh darn it. You darn Canadians. What will we do with you?
Yeah. Members of Frontline Assembly with members of Skinny Puppy, I think, working together. So.
Very cool. We may do an interim episode between now and episode 8.
Ooh.
Maybe we'll rewatch some stuff and get together and talk about some things.
And thank you, listeners, for bearing with us for the last episode coming out so late. That's my fault. I have taken way too long to edit.
Oh, honey, you don't know too long. Try 2.5 months, because that's how long it took me to get out an episode of Vedic Assembly because of the nightmare it was to edit. And that,
well, at least we're on hiatus.
Yeah, that wasn't anybody's fault, but anyway. It was just weird circumstances, and I'm not even going to go into how many hours it actually took me to do that. So.
Yeah, choppy internet connections have that kind of effect on things.
Oh, well, my
gosh. I wish that was the only problem. I wish. Right. I wish.
Yeah. Uh-oh, there's a story
there. Oh, there is. And I was really proud of myself for not pitching a fit and crying when things just kept going wrong. time after time.
Oh,
after
that's
time.
Right, because Audacity would close on you.
Yep. Yeah. It closed, yeah. Like, not even kidding, it closed at least 50, 60 times when I was trying to edit this. And wow. Anyway, so if we don't do an interim episode, but we might, but if we don't, then we'll definitely be back to talk about episode 8 of Star Trek Discovery. And until then, yes. I guess you're just going to have to use your imagination to figure out what the future holds. Recording.
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 Ta-da.
All right. Off to a good start.
The first thing I do is hack up a lung. Okay.
It is winter.
It is, and our air is terrible yep. here. So, yeah. All right. Here we go. And scene.
And exunt et al.